You are listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
This is Craig Andrews.
And we're going to get right into it. Craig, what is your hot take?
My hot take is for everybody that's trying to outsource customer engagement to AI, it's not going to work. If AI was good at human connection, then OnlyFans would not be a viable business model.
Oh my God, I cannot wait to get into this conversation. I pretty regularly joke with people like, hey, if this whole business owner thing doesn't work out, I guess I'm going to have to explore that OnlyFans thing. But obviously, like, that's a true joke. But no, it is so funny, too. And it is, unfortunately, the topic of conversation a lot on this podcast is there's really a couple different camps. Either one, AI is going to take your job and totally replace you. And we're all going to live in this utopia where we live on a, you know, on the perfect beach and we have perfect houses and we don't do any work. Or two, AI is just hype. And it's never actually going to do anything for you. And it's just, you know, a flash in the pan. I tend to fall somewhere in the middle. So I would love to dive deeper into kind of your experience with outsourcing AI and why you think is it not going to replace us? I'm making an assumption about which camp you fall in.
Yeah. So, I mean, let me just start off for all those that already hate me. I use AI every single day of the week, multiple times a day. It's an immensely valuable tool that's changed my life. And if you're not using it, you should be using it too. But for the sake of all that's good and holy, do not outsource customer service or sales to AI because it's not good at human connection. And I don't know what's missing, but there's something that's missing and my biggest proof positive. So let me go back to the 1990s when the internet was new. The only online businesses that made money were porn. And so it's not like the industry doesn't have the interest, doesn't have the money. They have both the money and the interest to replace all their actors. But for some reason, it's missing something. I don't fully understand what it is, but it's missing something.
I just came across a company and I'm going to need to like look up the name of their website, but they are essentially offering AI SDRs and this idea that you can like interact and engage with a person. And it's like a voice conversation, right? So you can see this avatar on screen, you know, it's an AI and you're talking to it and there's just something about it. And I think I figured out one of the things is that she doesn't blink enough and she just stares at you. And so like when she's having a conversation, so if you're watching the video version of this, she's having a conversation and she's just staring into the camera and she'll say something and then she won't move and she'll just stare at you. And it's almost like we as humans, we grab our drink, we move around, we touch our hair, we exist in a way that isn't so still. And I think that is part of it. And it also, I think they do not like the AI, whether you're interacting with one that has that visual look or if it's just a chatbot, they don't have all the context that you have as a person who is engaging with a customer. Like you can't take everything I've learned the last 15 years and boil it into a database.
Yeah. Well, and here's something else. AI has an inventory of everything that's been tried before, and it looks for a prior pattern to say, hey, you know what? We're going to use this pattern that worked before to work, use it now. But something somebody told me, it's so valuable. They said, without surprise, there is no delight. And so how can you surprise somebody with a proven script, something that's been used again and again and again? And that's where I think the chaos of human interaction brings that opportunity.
The other thing too is I worry that our brands are going to fall into the trap of all of our AI sales and customer success, customer support, little robots sounding the same, because they're trained on the same models that are underpinning all of these businesses. So in the same way that we're seeing logos change, where my Taco Bell logo is now a square and there's no sombrero in sight, and how Wendy's has the same kind of logo, and we see all, and Cracker Barrel, that whole thing with Cracker Barrel, where all of these logos are getting this same like faceless personality list rebranding, we're going to see that same experience with sales, because if we're all trying to build off the same playbook, we're all going to feel the same. And therefore, it's not going to be surprising. It's going to be exactly what you expect. And sometimes expectations is good. But how are you really going to differentiate when your AI is running the same playbook as your competitor's AI?
Yeah. And you know, it's funny when you say differentiate, you trigger something in me because, you know, we work with a lot of businesses. Our favorite business to work with is somebody that's in a crowded or commoditized market where they're fighting to differentiate themselves. And what we tell them is when you can't differentiate on what you do, the differentiation is you. And so it turns out that the best, at least in my opinion, the best marketing strategy is figure out what makes you weird, quirky, and interesting, and just amplify the crap out of that.
Yeah. I had someone on the guest one show who once said his hot take was we don't let our freak flags fly enough, and that like we're going to find our you're going to find your people if you just are who you are. And this idea of like too many of us are just trying to match the vibe, the feel, the playbook of our competitors. And then really we're going to be unhappy because those aren't going to be our best customers.
Right. And kind of going back to something you said a minute ago, you know, when, you know, 3 years ago, I was sitting at a conference where Google was speaking and somebody asked them, they said, hey, can we use AI to write our blog articles? And Google was like, yeah, sure. And I remember listening to that. I was like, I don't believe that because that contradicts every bit of advice that I've heard you give for the last 20 years. And what people don't realize when they think, hey, I found my new blog writer, it's called ChatGPT. I'm like, oh, like you're the only business that came up with this idea? Guess what? The new noise level is mass quantities of AI written content.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to rise out of the noise by having AI write your content. You're going to rise out of the noise by doing something different that AI isn't doing.
Yeah. It's almost like going back to the fundamentals of who we are as people and what we're delivering and what we're bringing to the table and how we have these conversations and build these human connections is going to be the thing that becomes our premium and our differentiator, right? Because we could record this podcast as AI. I have listened to AI podcasts and I'm like, I know that this is AI because I'm in the know, but there's people that are falling for it. So like we're still here on a podcast having a recording because there's still value and a premium in a human to human conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and one of the things that you said was, you know, when we were in the green room, you said, hey, I don't want to know what your hot take is because I want to be able to react to it live. And that's just something that's part of the dynamic that we crave. And I watch a lot of videos on YouTube and I see some videos. As soon as I realize it's being narrated by AI, I'm like, let's move on.
Scroll. Yeah. There's an ad I get on TikTok and I get it all the time. And it's something like, it's like, I used to live in leggings and now I have a capsule wardrobe. And like the way they say leggings, I'm like, that's not a real person. Nobody says I used to live in leggings. And it's intended to be like a real person. They're trying to copy that influencer video of like, I used to live in leggings, but now I have a capsule wardrobe. Right. But the way the inflection comes through, it is immediately obvious to me that it is AI. Now, some AI is good and I'm probably have fallen for, you know, something out there. But I think there's a fundamental, like, unidentifiable core in our humanity that knows something is off, even if we can't put our finger on it, even if we're not 100% sure what it is about that thing. But I repost on LinkedIn all the time where I'm like, there's just a little something off about this.
Yeah. Well, and here's one of the things I run into. So we just launched a branding ad for a client yesterday. And when we're doing that, we're trying to make, we want the person who reads the ad to have, to start believing certain things and having certain emotional responses. But you can't come out and tell them, hey, you should believe this, you should do that, because guess what? As soon as you say that, our brain, our the little centurions in our brain, our sentries in our brain, put up the guard saying, no, wait a minute. Are you sure you wouldn't believe that? And so the best way to pull it off is to tell a story that the natural outcome is that they adopt the beliefs of that story. How do you tell AI to do that?
You can't really. I can't imagine a way. Maybe someday it will get to the point where, you know, it can mimic that. I don't know that we'll ever get to the point where it can truly create that, right? And it's so funny. I firmly believe the universe puts situations and conversations into our path so that we can think about it. I was just having a conversation this morning about how I run a research company. We're delivering a research report. And I was going through my notes on some of the key findings, some of the interesting things that we found in this study. And I said, the only thing I don't want to do is give them a list of bullet points, because they're not going to use that. Like, they're not going to find value in that. They're going to nod along and smile and say, that's really interesting. And they may remember it. But how can we frame this research in a way that it doesn't just sit on the shelf, that it's something that they print out and put on their desk, that they think about, that they grab when it's time to do something strategic? And so we sat all morning and brainstormed, and we came to the conclusion that we wanted to tell a story, and we wanted to create an empathetic experience for the people who participate in this research, so that they can say, okay, this is how we can get inside their heads in terms of convincing them, connecting with them, or protecting them as our customers. But that's really hard to do. It's really hard to take something that's kind of tedious and technical and turn it into something that feels interesting, relevant, and useful.
Yeah, and you're speaking my language, because you know what? Stories are what persuade people. And if I can go geeky for about 30 seconds.
Every listener of this show is snapping and clapping for you to go geeky. They are those people.
Okay. All right. So the whole left brain, right brain, well, I'm a left brain person, I'm a right. Okay, that's crap. It's been largely discredited by psychologists. And it's really, you know, some language for it is system one, system two. Another language is fast brain, slow brain. Here's what it means. 95% of the decisions are made in the back portion of your brain. It's like a high-speed pattern recognition device. It looks for patterns and says safe or dangerous, desire or hate, and just makes these decisions at lightning speed. The front part of your brain is the only part of the brain that can answer the question, why did you do that? But it wasn't involved in 95% of the decisions. It was only involved in 5% of the decisions. And when you ask it and it's missing data, it fills in the gaps with crap. Mm-hmm. The person doesn't know that they're lying when they answer their why. Their brain lied to them and gave them something that's just completely false. And so that's why I'm like, be really, really careful with customer surveys. But if you want to move people, the only way you can move people, if you really want, you know, to grow your business and create the branding and the experience and the marketing that's going to grow your business, you're going to do it by programming people's system one thinking in the back of their brain. And the best way to do that is exactly what you said. It's to tell stories.
I think that I want to dig into this a little bit deeper, because my background is in marketing psychology. So this is like, I always tell people psychology was my true passion, and like what, how people think and how people make decisions. And marketing was the fact that I didn't want to be a shrink and go to grad school, and had to apply that to a job that I could get in the real world. So I want to come back to the why did you do that concept, because how many times do we ask that question to our customers and expect them to be able to articulate that? And we take their word as gospel because, well, they said it, so therefore it must be true. But you're right. A lot of us do not know why we do 90% of the things that we do and the reactions that we do. And that is like a biological design, because if we had to think through every single decision that we made all day long, that might not sound daunting, because you're thinking, well, I just, you know, I go to work and then I do this. But if you had to think about every step you took, every reaction you had, every like shift of your body, you would literally go insane. It's a protection mechanism for our brain, not intentionally lying to us, but protecting us from like a literal overload.
Well, and I would say you would starve to death. Okay. That's I'm going to go geeky again, if that's okay.
Do it.
So your brain is 2-4% of your body mass, but it consumes 20-25% of your energy. And chess masters have been known to burn 6,000 calories during a chess match. Okay, here's a story from my past. About 4 years ago, I was waking up from a coma. And in my coma, I was in a coma for 6 weeks, and I had all sorts of dreams. I remember my dreams like from 4 years ago, like you remember reality from 4 years ago, because that was my reality. And one of the things that was really puzzling was my wife was in very few of my dreams. And when she was in the dream, it was at the very end. She would show up, I would say something to her, and then that was it. And I realized what was happening later. I believe this is what was happening. So they gave her, this is COVID. They weren't letting family in the hospital, but she fortunately was tenacious and they gave her an hour a day to visit me. And I was literally on the edge of death. I was clinically anorexic. I was emaciated and barely clinging on to life. And I realized that when she showed up, my brain said, you're safe now. She's here. We can shut things down. And my brain would just go in kind of a shutdown mode to conserve calories to keep me alive.
It is amazing to, because obviously like you were unconscious. It's not like you said to yourself like, ah, yes, she's here. I can relax, right? In the same way that they talk about when you pick them up from daycare. I have two young children, so I would pick them up from daycare. And the first thing that my kid would do when I walk in from daycare is just start sobbing, right? Just start sobbing. And they say like, oh, you know, don't worry about that. Like, it's not that they had a terrible time at daycare. It's just you were there. And now all those big feelings could be let out because their safe person had walked in the door. Right. Mm-hmm. But in the same way that you in your medically induced coma couldn't articulate, ah, yes, my wife is here. I feel safe. I can go ahead and just like let it go. Even our young children. I mean, my kids were doing this at like 6 months old. This is an instinctual lizard brain response of I'm safe and I can let it all go.
Yeah. And one dream literally ended. In my world, I was in a weird medical commune in West Virginia. It was in a Victorian house. It had lacy white curtains, yellow tinted lights, and they were treating me harshly. And they were putting a willow reed down my throat that was supposed to make me better. And my wife came in and she approached from the right. And I looked at her and I said, you've got to get me out of here. What's happening here is not good. And that's when my dream ended. But that was me signaling to her, save me.
Right. That's wild. You know, when we're thinking about kind of coming back to your hot take, like this is an innately this conversation is an innately human experience, right? Like you tell your story about something that is truly a human experience. And an AI can't really conceive of being in a coma, for example, and the concept of it. They can only conceive of being like turned on and turned off, right? Online or offline. And the ability to connect it to, you know, child psychology and the child development. Those are things that are just innately human that make us special and that make this conversation relevant. Could you imagine if you were trying to portray to an AI this exact conversation? If I was an AI on the other side of the microphone, it just wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be as human.
No, not at all.
And no. It's so funny to your hot take, like we're trying to simulate what is a truly human experience, selling, buying, right? Because I believe that we are all buying something all the time, whether you're at the bar trying to find a girlfriend and you're selling yourself, whether you are buying a car, buying a professional service, buying a promise of, you know, weight loss or whatever the thing is that you are being pitched. We are always buying all the time and we are always selling all the time, whether we realize it or not. So if you can accept my premise that sales and marketing and connecting and trying to grow a business is a innately human experience, why are we trying to robotize it?
Because we're cheap bastards and we're lazy.
True.
I want it to be true. I want it to be true. Okay. I wake up in the morning. I got my little AI bots busy doing their job. I go take a nap, have fix a margarita or something like that. I want that world to be true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe some version of it will be someday. I'm a big believer in augmented reality instead of artificial intelligence, like augmented intelligence. How can I do the things I don't want to have to do? So I use AI every day, by the way. Like, don't assume this is an AI hate conversation. But like, I love to have AI roast my writing. So I'll write something. And then I'll be like, okay, roast this. Tell me, like, is this just a super common thought that I'm trying to dress up as like a breakthrough? Is this something that someone is going to roll their eyes at? Like, point out my blind spots and make fun of me in this moment. And that's a good way for me to say, okay, yeah, you're being pedantic here. Like, you need to move on from this thought.
Yeah. And to your point, AI does some amazing things. I mean, I use it, you know, I mentioned I have a podcast. I actually use it to help me produce the podcast, and it saves me at least an hour of time. And it's wonderful. It's great at summarizing things. It's great to have as a brainstorm partner. You know, I'll ask it, hey, give me 10 different ways of saying this.
Right.
And it's not that it gives me the answer, but usually it helps point me in the direction of the answer that I end up using. It's incredibly valuable, but you have to know what it is. It's out looking for patterns. It's a probability device that says, okay, we're here. This is most probably the next step. Okay. Once we take that next step, it's most probably the next step. But, you know, you have kids, right? And I'm sure they surprise you all the time, probably in the sense of, why did you think that would be a good thing to do?
I have a 10-year-old boy, so yes.
Yeah. And but that's human. You sit there. It's not like you haven't been around humans your whole life, but your little 10-year-old boy, you're like, why in the world did you think that was a good thing to do? But that's it. That's the surprise. That's part of being human, is we do some things that are unexpected.
So if someone is listening to this and they hear our point of, you know, we have to keep that humanity in it. But they also need to start integrating AI for whatever reason, whether it's board pressure or trying to increase their bandwidth or just trying to have a thought partner, like you mentioned. You know, what do you think is the biggest blind spot with people who are trying to implement AI and are trying to do it the right way, but are still kind of missing the mark?
Oh, you know, that's such a good question, because you threw the qualification in there that they're trying to do it the right way. I run across fairly few of those people. Most of the people I'm running into are like, they're like, yeah, it's my new blog writer. It's my new SDR.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, no, that's no, it's not. But I think the biggest, let me talk about where it's bitten me in the butt. So I was doing some writing for a client, and I just needed a little bit of information, like background information. So I'm sitting there asking it something. We were writing this story where we're tying Reggie Jackson and the 1977 New York Yankees team to his company and, you know, kind of what inspired him. And so I asked the question, I said, who was the batting coach for the New York Yankees in 1977? And it gave me a name. It was complete crap. It made it up. It was a hallucination. Yeah. And my buddy, who knows a lot more, you know, my client, who knows a lot more about baseball than I do, said, that dude didn't join the Yankees for another 2 years. Oh.
Right.
I was lied to.
Right. And then, of course, that, like, one, they saved you time, but it cost you maybe a little bit of credibility in their mind, right? Just a little bit of, like, wait a minute, you got this wrong, right? And, of course, this is someone you know, so they probably forgave the mishap. But there is always a risk, for sure, of, okay, you save time, but at what cost?
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you're using AI, I mean, anything that you do repetitively, my recommendation is write a GPT. And the easiest way, I know that sounds scary and technical, but the easiest way to write a GPT is go into AI and say, hey, I want a GPT that will do this for me. Can you tell me how to write it? Those are it, and we'll give you step-by-step instructions, and those are usually the best GBTs. But one of the things that you have to put in there is, do not hallucinate, do not guess. If you don't know the answer, just clearly state you don't know the answer. Yeah, in some ways, it's like, you know, probably how you deal with your 10-year-old son. Hey, if you don't know, you ask. Don't pretend you know. You know, it's right. That's kind of how we're treating AI.
Yeah. And if you're treating AI like it's smarter than you, I think you're going to run into a challenge or run into an issue. Because I've had to put in my custom instructions, do not hallucinate, do not guess. And it still does sometimes. Like, one time it said something to me and I was like, are you sure about? And then it's like, actually, you're right to question me. I'm going to go look on the internet now. And then it found a completely different answer. And I was like, okay, cool. So, like, you still have to, even with those instructions in place, be skeptical of what you're getting about facts or anything that could, you know, make you look bad. Nobody wants to look stupid when they're posting or sharing anything.
Well, and you probably got this prompt at some point where ChatGPT asked you, how do you want to be referred to? And I told it.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So I told it I wanted to be referred to as the most excellent, extraordinarily Craig, the master of all and knower of all. It is yet to refer to me that way.
Yeah. Mine, I don't think refers to me at all. Like, I don't think about it at all. But maybe it's just the way I'm prompting. You know, speaking of, this whole conversation really has been about human relationships and how we connect with each other, and especially in this new world of AI. Who, considering all the people that you know or that you aspire to know, who else should we be listening to? Who else is making waves out there?
You know, William Attaway runs a podcast called Catalytic Leadership. And it's ranked top 1.5% in the world. Maybe one top 1%. I forget where he is recently. But he's just a fascinating fellow who reads over 100 books a year, and but really kind and very insightful. And, you know, he's looking to bring what he would say catalytic moments in people's lives that really change the outcome. And so I would recommend that. Actually, I think shortly before our call, he was trying to call me. I just have enormous respect for him. Just such a great guy.
So I do want to, before we ask our final call to action of how people can connect with you, tell us a little bit more about your book. I saw that you have two published books that I would love to hear more about. So tell us more about your books and then where we can find you online.
So my wife and I co-authored a book called Hope That Won't Die. And it's about my near early departure from this world and what we learned in the process. For those missing the gaps, I was in the hospital with COVID on the ventilator. I was the first survivor that left that ICU alive and one of the very, very few that did. And we learned a lot. I hope we did. I hope we don't repeat that. And so I would recommend that. The other book I have is called Make Sales Magical. If I were a better marketer, I would have come up with a better name because everybody thinks I do sales. I do not. I believe when the marketing is done right, the sales are magical. And so that talks about, you know, kind of consistent with growth mode. It shows a process of how you can build rapid trust with clients in fields, typically high ticket services, where you can build rapid trust and you can greatly compress the sales cycle.
I think that is so important. I always tell people, if your marketing is done right, it's sales is deal to lose and not the other way around. And that's what every seller wants, right? We want great leads that come in that we can close, that are well-aligned, well-qualified. And all we have to do is say, here's the contract. Feel free to write me a check. So that's what everybody wants. Please go pick up a copy of his books. I have two orders, a copy of each book on the way. As people who listen to the show, I always order copies of the books for my guests, simply because one, writing a book is a lot of work and we should support everyone out there who has taken the challenge to be an author. But two, as everyone is listening know, we bring smart people on this podcast. If you liked what you're hearing from Craig, you're going to love diving deeper into his book. Craig, if someone was really connecting with you, they're grabbing a copy of the book, but they want more, where can they find you online?
So I'm easily found on LinkedIn, and they can come to my website, which is allies4me.com. That's A-L-L-I-E-S, the number 4-M-E.com. And actually, I have a gift for your audience if they're interested. We didn't really talk about it, but some of the elements from this book, we have a few gifts. It's like 23 days access to a course on how to build a first-time offer. Reason we're doing 23 days is we're not trying to be stingy. We just know that when people sign up for a course, a free course, they sign up and never take it. So we put a limit on there, and guess what? We see it in the analytics. People do the course.
We're going to create a little bit of urgency, right? Scarcity, it's going to go away. You better get in there and get access to it.
Yeah. And there's a couple other gifts in there. So they could come to allies4me.com/FTO23.
Awesome. Well, I will make sure to put that link. You sent that link to me. So I will put that link in the show notes because I'm looking at the landing page now. Guys, there's really good stuff on there. I can already tell. I see all kinds of landing pages in this podcast, and this feels like one that you're going to get a lot of value on. So make sure that you check that out. Craig, thank you so much for coming on the show. This episode went a little bit longer, but I was having such a good time. I didn't feel like I could end it.
Alyssa, this has been a delight. Thank you for having me.